Assalamu alaikum, our respected participants. This is Project Zainab Live on Wednesday nights, following our weekly lectures with Sheikh Hamza on family akhlaq in the Quran. For me personally, this has been a seriously life-changing series of lectures, and I can physically see the changes in myself and my interactions with my family and within my family in the last couple of weeks. I won't take any more of your time, but just before we get to Sheikh Hamza's lecture, if you please forgive me, I would like to do a small summary on last week's topic, just to get us back on track. And please, Sheikh Hamza, if I make any mistakes, please do correct me. So, 2 weeks ago, Sheikh Hamza introduced us to a verse of the Quran from Surah Ali Imran, verse 134, if I'm not mistaken. And there was three internal and external behaviors that were discussed in that. And Sheikh Hamza describes these two elements, and those were giving in happiness and sadness. And I'm poorly translating these, so please do refer to the lectures and do not take my words for them. It was capping your anger, for a lack of a better word, and it was erasing or forgiving other people's shortcomings. Last week, Sheikh Hamza, he went through this second aspect. My Arabic is very poor, but وَالْقَاذِمِينَ فِي الْغَيْزِ, and he explained how it means to this internal rising of emotions to cap that. And Sheikh Hamza went into a lot of depth exploring this aspect. He talked about when are you supposed to react? When it's a personal attack, when it's an attack on Islam, how you're supposed to react. He told us even at times when it is appropriate to react, what is your intention for reacting? Is it for yourself, or is it because Allah has commanded it to? One sentence that he explained really, really nicely is something that you should keep in your head, and that is, absolutely not. My actions will not be caused by my emotions. And something that, finishing off, Sheikh Hamza explored just two final points regarding when to express our anger. And he said that when it's acceptable to express, he very formally said, refer to your marja for cases where it's acceptable. And he gave us some homework to check up when it is acceptable and when it is acceptable to express this distaste or discouragement, or even maybe physically stopping someone. And when is it not acceptable? And as a general rule for saying it's not acceptable, he said that assume that you should not express your anger unless proven otherwise, so that you on the Day of Judgment can say before your Lord, I definitely said, got from my marja, that I have full permission to express dissatisfaction or anger. And with that, inshallah, Sheikh Hamza, I leave it to you.
May Allah bless you, Jazakumullah, for that. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, salamun alaykum to all. Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen, Bari'il Khala'iq Ajma'in, Ba'athil Anbiya'i wal Mursaleen, والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. For the hastening the return of our Imam, let's all recite the salawat. اللهم صل على Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad wa ajjal farajahum. The second Fatimiyah is approaching, and we express our condolences to all the lovers of the Ahlul Bayt, the followers of the Ahlul Bayt, the lovers of Fatimah al-Zahra, the followers of Fatimah al-Zahra, and above all the Imam of our time on the occasion of the martyrdom of Fatimah al-Zahra, salamullahi alayha. A woman that represented all teachings of Islam in that short period of life that she had, as her children, her husband, and her father did, but she, as a woman, represented all of that in a way that we all need to look up to, male and female. And we hope to aspire to reach the soil, the dust beneath her feet, inshallah, because we are very far away from even the dust beneath her feet. The discussion we had on akhlaq from the Quran, we talked about some of the general understandings that we need to have. Then we moved on to general approaches we need to have towards mu'mineen. And then we started to discuss some of the more practical but still general rules that we have, and guidances and guidelines that we have in Islam on the topic of akhlaq. But before that, I'd like to reiterate this, that we need to come to the understanding that the Holy Quran contains all of this very valuable information, and it's all available to every single one of us. If I'm presenting here, I'm simply trying my best to present the Quran, obviously the way I understand it, but this is not limited to someone like myself. And the obligation of it and the necessity of looking into it is not limited to myself, and it's not limited to ulama or speakers. It is an obligation for all. Everyone needs to look at the Holy Quran, read it consistently, regularly. I just came across a couple of lines, a couple of instances of this great Shaheed, Haj Qasim Soleimani, who wasn't what we identify typically as an alim, someone who has studied in the Hawza, someone who has studied Islam regularly in a seminary, although he had studied Islam in various ways throughout his life and he never stopped. But one line that he had when he was visiting a certain area, and obviously his military interactions in the Islamic Republic, when he left the base after a couple of years of being there and leading that particular base and their efforts, he left a note for the one who was going to lead that base and was leading before him and now after him would be doing the same. And part of that note was telling them that it's a requirement. You have to yourself and require all of the soldiers under you, everyone under you, to read a few pages of Quran a day. This is what a Muslim is supposed to be like. Everyone is supposed to read the Quran themselves. Ponder upon it. Make yourself familiar with it. The more you read and the more you try to make yourself familiar, the more familiar you will become. The more you try to apply those teachings you find, the more you will again find the doors of the Quran opening themselves to you, because you have abided and you have conformed with that teaching. فَقْرَأُوا مَا تَيَسَّرَ مِنْهُ فَقْرَأُوا مَا تَيَسَّرَ مِنَ الْقُرْآنِ. Read whatever you can of the Quran in Surah Muzammil. You've complied with that. You've tried as best you can to do that. A few pages a day, a couple pages a day, a page a day, read it, try to have understandings on your own, refer to translations, do this, make this a habit. If you think of a verse, a word of a verse, and you think of something that was said regarding it, and you have a question, follow up on it. Go look at a couple of translations, think about it, verses before, verses after, see if you can make sense of it. And keep trying that. The more you do that, the more you will be able to understand more of the Quran. The Quran will open up to you. This is how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made it. Now, back to this particular verse. We talked about the first part of it, as the brother mentioned earlier. الَّذِينَ بِسْمِ اللَّهِ الرَّحْمَنِ الرَّحِيمِ الَّذِينَ يُنْفِقُونَ فِي السَّرَّاءِ وَالضَّرَّاءِ. Giving, whether we are in a happy condition, we are in a pleasant condition, and also when we are in an unpleasant condition. Then last session we focused on al-kadhimin al-ghayd, And we explained what the ghayz is, the feelings that we get, the rage that starts to boil within us. And kadhumin, meaning, as the brother mentioned too, I think that was the choice we had to cap it, those feelings, because the word kadhum comes from capping a container that is full so it doesn't flow over. And that's really the meaning, the concept, the understanding we should have. These feelings of rage boil until they overflow. They just start to reveal themselves in our words, in our expressions, in our physical behavior. And we've got to cap it. We've got to make sure that those feelings will come. Okay, but when they come, that they are not the source of us acting. They are not the reasons why we act. The reason why we act is that God said to act. And that's the last part of what the brother said. I don't want to reiterate. That was already recapped. But I needed to say that because of this last part. It says, وَالْعَافِينَ عَنِ النَّاسِ. We generally said this means to erase. But I want to explore this idea a little more. See the difference between that and الكاظمين الغيظ. And so we can more carefully understand and to be able to apply this, inshallah. So الكاظمين الغيظ had to do with the rise of the feeling of rage and anger when we come across a certain situation. Someone says something, someone does something. Those feelings come. That's not under our control. We're not the ones that have created ourselves for those feelings to come or not to come. God has created us with that feeling. And he says, I'm going to give it to you, but your job is to control it, cap it, don't let it reveal. Then look back what I have said, do according to what I have said, and based on what I have said to the extent that I have said, and not because you're angry, not because you're outraged. Rather, it's because you are obeying my command. That's the reason why you act, you speak, you show a facial expression of some sort. All of that is based on following my orders. This is what you need to do. I have given it to you, but this is how you need to deal with it. So that's in the moment when something outrageous has occurred. I have seen this from someone. Someone has said something, done something. And when I hear it, I just catch fire, outraged by that. What do I do? First thing, kadhumin al-ghayz. That rage needs to be capped. It's not going to reveal itself. The other thing is then, okay, what other should I do in that condition regarding what was done? That's a different thing. The first thing that this verse actually only deals with is first thing. We explored a bit more based on other verses and other a hadith to explain what this doesn't mean, to clarify that this isn't telling us that we should always be calm no matter what happens. No, the feelings will come. This is the first thing you need to do. Then afterwards, you might even need to show some form of anger in your words, in your voice, in your tone, in your behavior. There's a time, let me give this as an example. Of a great scholar who tried his best to implement these, and as far as I understand, this is an implementation. There was a time where Ajla Burujerdi was still alive. You can look these figures up and try to learn a little more about them. These are important figures in our recent history, in our contemporary history. They have affected our lives. Ajla Burujerdi was the main marja for the Shia. He was based in Qom. He was a graduate of Najaf. He came back to Iran. He was in his city of Burujerd. And some of the scholars, including Imam Khomeini, asked him to come to Qom. He came. Eventually, he became the top marja when the previous marja, who was based in Najaf, passed away. And a great number of scholars were trained by him. On the political side, however, he was not very much involved and very much informed and very much politically capable. This is a fact of him. This is not downplaying him. This is stating how he was. He didn't have those abilities that Imam Khomeini did. And at the time, different things happened. And Imam Khomeini felt that the stance of the Hawza, and he correctly understood that the stance of the Hawza should be very strong, very firm, and very public. Ajla Burujerdi didn't see that, so he acted based on how he understood things. In one of these instances, which I believe is related to the imprisonment of one of the scholars, graduates of Najaf, who was politically active, very active, Shahid Navob Safavi, a great scholar. A lot of people have been inspired by him. Ayatollah Khamenei says he was his the first inspirations of the revolution were sparked by the presence of Shahid Navob Safavi in Mashhad. I personally was inspired by just reading his story. That's, I think, one of the first inspirational stories I remember reading in my early teens. Regarding Shuhada and inspiring the concept of Shahada, as he very well did during his lifetime, he was imprisoned, and they knew, Imam Khomeini knew, because of his correct understanding of politics and politicians and so on, that he will be executed. So they went to Ayatollah Burujerdi and they had a discussion with him. Ayatollah Burujerdi, they channeled information, the Shah and some people connect. They channeled through people that seemed to be religious, unfortunately, information to him that, no, that's not going to happen. And so Ayatollah Burujerdi didn't take any stance, and they ended up executing Shahid Navob Safavi, as Imam Khomeini had said and predicted. So in the session that they were having this discussion, and they were presenting to Ayatollah Burujerdi that this is a must, this is what needs to happen, he was disagreeing with them. Based on not proofs, but based on clearly what they saw was a lack of understanding of the condition. So Imam Khomeini, in one of the comments, I don't know exactly what the comment was Ayatollah Burujerdi had made, he got very angry. This has been recorded in books. Imam Khomeini got very angry at what was said because of how wrong it was. It was nothing personal, it wasn't a personal attack on him. What was said was very wrong, and he got very angry. And so he didn't respond in any negative words, any ill words, any of that. But he had to show how angry he is, to show how wrong this is, to get the point across. What did he do? It says that he picked up one of the teacups, a glass teacups, and he threw it up against the wall and broke the teacup. Well, this is a show of anger. This is a show of rage. Okay. Is this based on because of the feeling within? No. That's capped. Qadhimin al-ghayth. Okay. Ghayth is capped. But what happens is that it needs to be shown how wrong this comment is. So out of the things that are allowed, one of them is to do something like that. He threw a cup and broke it. Show how angry he is, to show how wrong this is, not to show his feelings. Again, the display of feeling or acting based on feeling and emotion is not the idea here. So this was to, again, through an example, besides the side points that are important for all of us to know, is to understand what ghayz is. It's something that's said in the moment. You have this ghayz, this rage that grows in you. That's what that deals with, okay? So what is forgiving, afina anin nas, deal with? If I'm already capping that feeling at that point, isn't that already not reacting to their wrongdoing and capping those feelings? What afina anin nas has to do is the next step. So when something is done towards me or towards my religion, towards my ideology, towards whatever it is, it's something that affects me. If I control those feelings at that moment, that's a good thing to do. However, what happens is that there remains a memory of that in me. And there remains negative feelings that are not called ghayz here. That rage that is there is one thing. After that, the rage has simmered down. Now I'm calm, I'm cool. But there is a feeling that's not called ghayz, and I think I can call it sort of a scar that remains within me. That hurt. What they did, what they said, affected me. And now I'm dealing with that. And it doesn't show it regularly, show itself and reveal itself regularly. There are certain times and conditions that it starts to come about. For example, if things are going well and we're having a good conversation with one another, that's not going to pop up. But, and now in the context of like family life, if something else comes up, now another discussion, another issue, another problem comes about, another disagreement comes about. When that disagreement comes about, then that feeling from before kicks in. Okay, that feeling from before kicks in. And now it may not be a situation of rage again. It may not have to do with that. It's just I'm irritated. I can be irritated by them and do certain things because, now there's another word that we can use. We call it a grudge. We hold a grudge against the person. They said something, did something. There's something in me. We call it a grudge. Okay, we hold a grudge against that person. I want to, again, not every minute, but when the condition is right, that feeling comes in and it causes us to want to do something. And again, if we analyze this feeling and this want and this desire to do something to this person, it has to do with my feelings, okay, the way I feel towards this person. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says here, Al-'afina 'anil nas. So they did something, it hurt you, it made a scar, that can be the source of a grudge. It will be a source of a grudge unless this happens to a lesser or greater degree. It will be a source of some form of a grudge against the person. It will remain there. And the verse is, 'afina 'anil nas. No, it heals. The heart of a believer, of a mu'min, of a muttaqi heals. And they do it. It doesn't happen on its own. Meaning they need to do that. Afin, I forgive. Later on, if that memory comes back again, I remind myself, that's all forgiven. I don't have any feelings towards the person. Any negative, ill feelings that are strong and I need to get them back, which we call a grudge. No. Afin 'anil nas. This is to understand what this is referring to, afina 'anil nas, referring to in terms of the internal aspect of, you know, what's the context of this, what's the difference between this and kadhimin al-ghayd. Kadhimin al-ghayd is in the moment that something outrageous is done, something that would arise my anger, my rage, and then afterwards, whether it's something that caused my rage or hurt me or whatever it was, then removing this memory and the feeling that I have towards the person when the moment is over afterwards. They've done something wrong to me. Afterwards, removing that from my heart. It may even not be caused by rage at the moment. Sometimes we're not outraged. There's no time for that. We're just hurt. Okay, we feel fear, for instance. If an oppressor comes and oppresses us, there are many times where at the moment there's no condition that one can have that condition of rage. They feel outnumbered. They feel overpowered. They feel that there's nothing they can do. And what the person does just either or first causes fear and then hurt and pain and so on and so forth. It may not be just rage. So this is both in the case where there is rage, it's afterwards. In other cases, it's the effect, again, not in the moment, because those are other feelings that you get and other verses deal with those, but the hurt that is caused, that will cause me to have a grudge. Okay. It says, afina 'anil nas. So this is internally what happens. What are the cases of this? Similar to al-kadhimin al-ghayd, the verse is Al-Afina 'anil nas. Nas is general. It includes all mu'min, non-mu'min, Muslim, non-Muslim, everyone. Enemy of Allah, non-enemy of Allah, Afina 'anil nas. So this af towards all people, and to what degree, regarding what actions, it doesn't have any modifier here explaining any condition, any particular case, generally, al-afina 'anil nas. What we understand from this, as we explained regarding al-kadhimin al-ghayd, is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is telling us that a mu'min, a muttaqi, when it comes to their personal feelings towards another person, besides rage, the grudge that can be caused by multiple things, they relieve their hearts of that. They remove that from their hearts, no matter who it is and no matter what they have done. The heart, this is not the behavior. It affects the behavior. I will explain that. But in the heart, the feeling they have, the negative ill feeling they have towards another person, based on whatever, right or wrong, they have done to me, it's even if it's completely wrong what they did, and those feelings are natural, and realizing and understanding that what they did was wrong is correct. We've checked all of that, let's say. But there remains a scar that will cause me to act towards this person without forgiving. I want to take revenge. If you don't forgive, you want to react and respond and get back at them when there's an opportunity and when you remember. This is no afuna an nas, reaction to that deed based on this feeling. No, the feeling is removed. Afuna an nas. I see the person next time. I don't feel, the person may even come to me and say, oh, I remembered I did this to you. I'm really sorry. Like, oh, no, not even an issue. I had forgotten about it. Or you don't need to worry about it at all. I don't have any feelings. Not just saying that, being like that, really and truly being as such. So this teaching, a very important teaching that we're going to explore some of the practical aspects of this and what this externally, because it is practical, but it's internal. And the external implications of this, we need to explore and look at in various cases, inshallah. But the teaching is this: when you have something done to you, that scar that is made in your heart because of what they have done, that is removed, it's omitted, it's erased, it's no longer there. It's as though they never did anything. Regarding anyone and any action, whether it's because of my religion, because of my ideology, because of whoever, it's being done to me, but it's because of Islam. They killed Amir al-Mu'mineen, what for? Salamullah alayh, because of Islam. If he would have accepted their ways, they wouldn't have had an issue. If he would have joined them, they wouldn't have had an issue. It was because of Islam. But because of Islam, who did they injure? Who did they fight? Who did they kill? Ali ibn Abi Talib, salawatullah wa salamu alayh. Because of Islam, sometimes harm comes our way. An enemy of Islam, because I'm standing for Islam, attacks me. Even in those cases, is that an instance of nas? Yes. Then does it say afin? Does it include that? Yes. But remember, this includes the feeling I have in my heart in regards to that person affecting me. This is what the verse is talking about. It's important to have that. And I'll show evidence from the Quran that it even includes this. We'll show how this is the case. But before that, the importance of this is that we will be able to act based on what God says towards people. If we don't, our judgment will be clouded by the grudge. Our judgment, if I have that bad feeling towards the person, if I haven't omitted it, when that person tells me something, says something to me, I naturally am going to understand it in a negative context. Maybe not every single statement, but when there's room for that, it will kick in and it will cause me to understand the words of that person in a negative way. Whereas perhaps at least Because sometimes that person does mean that negative thing, and sometimes they don't. But I tend to understand what they say, their comments, their words towards me, about me, to other people. When they disagree with me, I tend to assume that the reason is that they're a bad person, or they're trying to hurt me. They're doing this against me. Why? Because of that scar that's left there. I have this. It's natural. It will happen. It affects judgment. This is one thing. And then from judgment, which some of those judgments themselves are sins. The Quran says, let's not forget, in Surah Hujurat, we didn't read all of those verses. Everyone knows this. It's a basic and simple teaching. Inshallah, at some point we will cover, if Allah gives us the tawfiq to. It says, اجتنبوا كثيرا من الظن إن بعض الظن إثم. Avoid many and multiple instances of dhan. Dhan is coming to a conclusion without actual evidence. This is what we call an assumption. Okay. Don't make assumptions. Avoid many and multiple cases of assumptions. Why? Because some of them are sin. The assumption itself is sin. If you assume a mu'min, a believer who has accepted Allah, who has accepted the Prophet, who has accepted Islam, be it that they sometimes, many times, just like myself, don't abide by it, but they have agreed to and they believe in it and they want to, by being Muslim, they want to abide by it. If without evidence, I assume that a believer has done something wrong, this is a sin. This is su'ul dhan, which is a sin. This is one of the cases, at least. Inna ba'da dhan ithm. Some assumptions themselves, not the reaction, not what you do with that assumption. Just having that assuming, thinking that a believer has done something wrong where you have not seen it, or you don't have evidence acceptable in God's court, without that, you have assumed and believed that they have done something wrong. That, in and of itself, even if you don't tell anyone, even if you don't act towards them in any different way, just think of them that way, that itself is a sin. That's how bad it is. Some assumptions themselves are wrong. Now, this thing comes in. If I don't do that, sometimes this feeling will cause assumptions. And some of those assumptions themselves are going to haunt me because they themselves are sins. This is a mu'min in the case where most of our discussion is related to this. A mu'min, okay. A mu'mina, a brother, a sister, they did something and it was wrong, let's say. If I don't heal that, if I don't get rid of that scar, if I don't forgive them entirely, erase it from my heart, it will stay there. It'll affect my judgment of their words, of their behavior. I'll have negative judgments. And we've seen this, unfortunately. People who don't control this, and they don't control their grudges, they don't do this afu, and they don't, afterwards, when they have those assumptions, they don't treat that either. And once it comes, they don't realize, oh my God, I just committed a sin. I made that. There's really no evidence. And they don't do istighfar of that. Gradually, it becomes part of their character. They always have suspicion. They always think this guy's doing something. They said this because of this, that, the other, whatever. All these negative thoughts about. So they haven't treated that. They didn't realize that the Quran says, Al-afina anil nas, and regarding suspicion, it says, no, don't have assumptions, wrong assumptions. It creates a lot of problems in families and in the community and so on. That's with the assumption itself. Then those wrong assumptions, those suspicious assumptions of what the person meant or did, are going to cause certain behavior towards the person that will affect the family, that will affect the community, all of that. Where is the root? What's the root of that? Sure, assumptions are wrong. That is another problem that we should deal with, and we will discuss that. But the reason what we're talking about right now is not assumption itself, it's not suspicion itself. It's something more fundamental, and that is the scar that is left from a misbehavior of another person towards myself. That leads to misunderstandings. It leads to suspicion. It leads to assumptions made that are not legitimate. And that leads to actions towards that person that will affect the family. It will affect the community a lot of times. And it'll affect us first and foremost. Before anyone else, the one who is going to be affected most is ourselves. Our spiritual progress will be halted. We will not be able to make that progress if we continue going and doing those wrong things, those wrong assumptions. When we don't deal with this scar and remove it and erase it from our heart, at another time where, besides assumption, okay, this is not assumption, clearly there's evidence the person has done another wrong thing to me, or another wrong thing, not to me necessarily, I identify something else that is clear, no, there's definitely evidence there, I'm not making any type of assumption, clearly I've checked 50 times, other people have seen it too, it's wrong, okay. The way I'm going to deal with that one to stand against my feelings and emotions is going to be more difficult at that stage. To be willing to do exactly what God says in those cases is going to be very difficult. Why? Because the feeling of a grudge. Now, there's different degrees of this, obviously. There's smaller grudges that are easier to deal with. And there's sometimes very serious grudges that one can have. Very serious grudges that are caused by the behavior of that other person. It is wrong behavior from the other person. Okay. I'm talking about these cases that are most difficult to deal with. There are cases that, no, the person didn't do anything wrong. It's my misunderstanding. Leave those aside. Even in cases where this grudge is based on the misbehavior on once, twice, three or four times of that person, they've done wrong things. I didn't do that once, twice, third time, fourth time. This grudge has accumulated. Now, it becomes very difficult to deal with if God tells me to do something that goes against this grudge. I'm going to give you an instance from the Quran that in many ways, a very difficult instance of this, meaning dealing with a grudge or what can potentially, where there can potentially be a grudge. And if we hadn't applied that rule that God says, Al-'afina 'anil nas, then it becomes a very serious problem for us to behave correctly in this context. What is it? Let me first read you, give you the address where this is found in the Quran. This is verse 11 of Surah Tawbah. 11 of Surah Tawbah. Let me read it. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. فَإِن تَابُوا وَأَقَامُوا الصَّلَاةَ وَآتَوُوا الزَّكَاةَ فَإِخْوَانُكُمْ فِي الدِّينِ. Translation. Then, if they repent and uphold prayer and give zakat or charity, then they are your brothers in religion. What is this referring to? Go ahead and check Surah Bara'ah or Surah Tawbah. It's the only chapter in the Quran that does not start with a Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And it's because it's addressing at the beginning of it, the kuffar, and the language is very harsh. And so the reminders of God being the all-merciful are not put there at the beginning of this chapter. This is how harsh it is. This is Surah Tawbah. It addresses the mushrikeen and the kuffar initially, and then later on it addresses the kuffar of the Ahlul Kitab, the Christians and the Jews that were fighting Islam. But initially it's the mushrikeen, the staunchest enemies of the Prophet. According to the Quran, the worst enemies of the Prophet were the mushrikeen and of the believers generally up to today. The mushrikeen and the Jews. The Quran says, these are not my words. And it's not the Zion, it says the Jews. The Jews are. The Jews are the greatest enemies of the Muslimin along with the mushrikeen. When it talks about the mushrikeen, these mushrikeen, this is after the conquest of Mecca. There's still mushrikeen around. And these tribes, they had treaties with the Prophet that they will not attack and they will not harm the Muslimin, and the Muslimin will not harm them. They broke their treaties. Okay. After multiple instances, in this year, Amir al-Mu'mineen was sent with this to Masjid al-Haram in the ceremony of Hajj to announce to everyone, to the Mu'mineen for one reason, to the Mushrikeen for another reason, for the Mu'mineen to know how to treat the Mushrikeen, what the instructions are, and for the Mushrikeen to know what they are supposed to, what's going to happen to them if they don't change their ways. And that was very harshly. Let me read to you what the verses say. It says, I'm reading verse 5 of Surah Tawbah. It says, فَإِذَا سَلَخَ الْأَشْهُرُ الْحُرُمُ فَاقْتُلُوا الْمُشْرِكِينَ حَيْثُ وَجَدْتُمُوهُمْ. When these months of haram, the months with special respect that you're not supposed to attack and you're not supposed to kill, even if it is legitimate, that person deserves to be killed. During these months, you're not supposed to attack. Roughly, this was not a very accurate explanation of that, but roughly, this is what the idea is. After these months are over, then it says, فَقْتُلُوا الْمُشْرِكِينَ حَيْثُ وَجَدْتُمُوهُمْ. Kill the mushrikeen wherever you find them. وَخُذُوهُمْ وَحْصُرُوهُمْ. Take them. وَحْصُرُوهُمْ وَقْعُدُوا لَهُمْ كُلَّ مَرْصَدٍ. Surround them and ambush them. Very harsh. These are not. So God is giving them warning. If you don't change, and not this is not another treaty. This is, there's no more treaties. You're either at this point, you have this time because you've broken these treaties. We've allowed you to remain mushrik, have your ways, but don't fight us. You have disobeyed that. You have gone against those treaties multiple times. That is over. You're either going to become Muslim, and if you're not going to become Muslim, then here you go. اقتلوهم حيث وجدتموه. Whenever you find them, kill them. Very harsh, right? And who are these people? These are people that the Muslimin have been hurt by on multiple occasions. The Battle of Ahzab, many of these tribes were part of that battle against the Muslimin. In numerous battles, these people killed relatives, great believers in these battles. You have believers on this side, they've lost relatives to these mushrikeen that unjustly, wrongly killed their relatives. So it's killing a mu'min is itself hurtful, but that mu'min being your relative, it's obviously added hurt and pain because it's a relative. Knowing, so this is the condition, imagine a country that was at war with you, a people that were at war with you, and you made treaties, they broke those treaties, multiple occasions, they killed some of you, okay? Especially those who were directly affected by those enemies. This is the context, now this verse that we read initially. فَإِن تَابُوا وَأَقَامُوا الصَّلَةَ. If they said, we repent, we are Muslim now, and they start praying and paying zakat, for ikhwanukum, they're your brothers. Your brothers. the day before this, this guy killed my relative. Now he heard this. He's coming and saying, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammad Rasulullah. How do I pray? Can somebody teach me? The verse says, he's your brother in Islam. Teach him how to pray. How are you going to do that? How can you do that? How can you do that? With these very strong grudges. And remember we said we have proof from the Quran that this is not related only to instances where it's a personal matter and they disrespected me on a personal matter, even if it's religious. This is the proof for it. These guys fought us because of Islam. How in the world can I all of a sudden, as soon as they say, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammad Rasulullah, treat them as brothers? How can I do that? Well, the answer is, the only way that it's possible is, Aafin. There is no grudge. There was never a grudge. I never fought them because of my feelings. I never fought them because it was my brother they killed, my blood brother, and I have this rage against them, or I have this grudge against them. It was never because of that. I had learned to do Aafin anin nas. Amir al-Mu'mineen, salawatullah wa salamu alayhi, when he went to the battlefield, after, let's say, the Battle of Uhud, Amir al-Mu'mineen's uncle, Sayyid al-Shuhada, before Imam al-Husayn, Hamza, the uncle of Amir al-Mu'mineen and the uncle of the Prophet, this great man, he was killed in the Battle of Uhud and opened up in that way. Amir al-Mu'mineen was part of the troops that conquered Mecca. They conquered Mecca. Now before them is the one who ordered the killing and the opening of Hamza, the wife of Abu Sufyan. Abu Sufyan came forward, said, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammad Rasulullah. Because the other uncle of the Prophet, Abbas, told him that the only way that I know of that you can spare your life is to say that you're Muslim and accept Islam. And he said, he came and said, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. Both the Prophet, who was hurt even more. Just imagine, the Prophet was personally mocked. Stones were thrown at him. Trash was thrown onto him. His wife was lost. He lost his wife because of the embargo that was led by this figure. He lost his uncle by a war that was waged by this figure. And he was opened up, that uncle of his was opened up by the wife of this individual. All these things, add them all up. Now this man has come in the presence of the Prophet. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. The verse says, In tabu wa aqamu salat wa atawu zakat fa ikhwanukum. They're your brothers. Okay, he said, Ashhadu an la. God says, treat him as your brother. How in the world is this possible? Because you implemented that. Aafina anin nas. All that wrongdoing of Abu Sufyan was not personally against the Prophet. It was because of Islam. Yes. But Aafina anin nas. Af was there. Personally, there's no af. The Prophet didn't start fighting Abu Sufyan and his people in the Battle of Badr because he had lost certain things. He had lost his wife, he had lost his uncle Abu Talib because of the hardships caused by these people. It was never a cause. There was never a grudge against them. Never. As much wrong as they did to the Prophet because of his Islam, he never had any personal grudge. He fought them, yes. In the Battle of Badr, in the Battle of Uhud, in the Battle of Ahzab or Khandaq, in the Battle of Hunayn after the conquest of Mecca. In various battles, the Prophet fought them. None of that was based on a grudge. None of it. And therefore, when there is no grudge, God says, fight them while they're fighting you. Okay, I'll fight them. The war is over. You have more power. You're conquering Mecca. They said, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. No fighting. Prophet says, okay, no fighting. Very easy. Very easy. Because the war was for Allah, not because of feelings. The war, when it was happening, the fighting, when it was happening, it wasn't because of a grudge. There was never a grudge. As soon as God says, now in this condition, they're your brothers. They're my brothers. I will treat them as brothers. This is how we need to be, brothers and sisters. The only way we can arrive at this point where when God tells us that, hey, now these are mushrikeen that became mu'mineen, at least superficially. In the case where a mu'min has done something wrong, they have not repented. In some cases, God says, you've got to get back at them. Not personally, in some cases, you need to treat them a certain way. Okay. As soon as they repent, even if it seems superficial, which the grudge causes us to say, no, they don't really mean to apologize. They don't really regret what they did. Put that aside. They ask for forgiveness. All right. From this point onward, that behavior, not the feeling, there was never a grudge. They had been forgiven. The afu had already occurred. Remember the story of Malik al-Ashad. He didn't wait for the guy who threw his saliva on his face, which is really irritating, very displeasing, very rude. He didn't wait for the guy to come and say, I apologize. He went and asked God to forgive him. Not only did he forgive his share, he asked God, what he did to another believer is wrong. I'm asking you to forgive him. See, this is that instance of Malik al-Ashtar that we've heard. It's not him forgiving. He had already forgiven. He's asking God to forgive him. He's doing shafa'a for him. This is an instance of shafa'a. He's asking God, Allah, there's a little bit of maybe my word is accepted here. I want to ask that this person is forgiven for something that he did towards this servant of yours. The only way this behavior can happen is al-afina 'anil nas. And brothers and sisters, where we need this most is where we have more interaction with individuals that we have more interaction with, which means our family members. There's more opportunity, or there are more instances where a person can make a mistake and do something wrong, say something wrong, lay a hand where they're not supposed to, raise a hand where they're not supposed to, say a word that they're not supposed to. Other people don't see us as much. And because of that, there's less chance for us to reveal that, for them to have wrongdoing towards us, or to do wrong towards us, and for us to do wrong to them. Family members within a household, parents, siblings, children, we're together 24/7, especially in the context of this pandemic. I don't know how it is over there in Ireland, but I know I just heard from the UK and I know of the US. I think Ireland is similar, but I have heard some places in Africa it's not like this. But anyway, there's a lot of lockdowns. People have to spend more time at home or together, and that increases the chances of each of us doing something wrong. When that wrong is done to us, if we're going to consider it our right to hold that as a grudge, and next time blow up and say, you did this, you did that, and so on and so forth, it is going to raise the levels of rage and dissatisfaction towards one another in so many different ways, and in such a drastic way that it will reach a point of explosion where people just don't want to see each other. But if the reverse happens, especially in the context of this pandemic and this condition, we get more of an opportunity to practice this al-afina 'anil nas. My sibling, my mother, my father, my child, my spouse said something that, even if it was wrong, afina 'anil nas, forget it completely. It never happened. Next time it happens, again, afina 'anil nas. Again, afina 'anil nas. You get more opportunity to practice this. And brothers and sisters, a soul that is able to do this, one of the beautiful things and that you could see in Hajj Qasim is exactly that. That عَافِينَ عَنِ النَّاسِ عَافِينَ عَنِ النَّاسِ. No matter what is said, what is done, very easily forgive. And this makes it possible for a person to interact with more and more people. Hajj Qasim had to deal with people from various ethnic backgrounds, and that causes a lot more room for misunderstanding on both sides. And on both sides means that there are going to be cases where the other person is going to think I disrespected them, and then they're going to react in a certain way towards me because they thought I disrespected them, although I didn't disrespect, for instance. Or they may say something, I think they disrespected me. And this is why we can't get along in our communities where we have multi-ethnic communities. And we should have more and more of that because we are a global community. How can we do this? Someone from another language background can barely speak my language, or I can barely speak their language. They say something I misunderstand. I get angry. They don't do things the way we do. All this, it just causes, you know what? Leave this. Marriages, separation, divorce. I can't handle this. عَافِينَ عَنِ النَّاسِ, even when it is something wrong, really, that has been done. عَافِينَ عَنِ النَّاسِ, erase it. Erase it. It will allow two people to live together. It will allow for them to start looking or overlooking these flaws and see the beauties. A lot of times we're held back by these grudges to such a degree that we can't see good in our spouse. We just don't see it. Every time I look at her, remember this instance, that instance, it's nothing wrong. Even I start finding flaws in her face, in her nose, in her eyes, in her body, or this, that, the other. But if that af occurs, and those, I get past them, then I start seeing more and more beauty. Then I start seeing more the iman. This is a mu'min. Even if there are some shortcomings, I have shortcomings too. They're dealing with my shortcomings. I see their iman. I see their beauty. With children, with parents dealing with children in their teens, the most difficult time that a parent deals with a child is in their teens, when they start getting a little more independent. From the parent's side, okay, from the child's side, there's things that need to be said, but from the parent's side, a lot of times the child does say and do wrong things towards us and Islamically and so on and so forth. Don't forget that a lot of times these create scars, and those scars cause us not to see the goodness in that child. Not seeing the good of that child causes us a lot of problems. And we gradually move in a direction that we just can't stand the person. Every time something wrong happens, عَافِينَ عَنِ النَّاسِ, we apply it. عَافِينَ عَنِ النَّاسِ, it's removed, it's not there. They never said that to me. Next day something else happened, it's easy to do that. Then again I do عَافِينَ عَنِ النَّاسِ. Third time, same thing. But if I didn't do عَافُ the first time, second time it's more difficult, I don't do عَافُ that time either. Third time I blow up. Fourth time, get out of the house. Fifth time I disown you, this, that, the other. The child doesn't want to stay in the house anymore. Learn this. We all need this. عَافِينَ عَنِ النَّاسِ. We all need it in the community, brothers, sisters. If someone did anything wrong to me, okay, let's say that understanding of ours is correct. The Quran says, عَافِينَ عَنِ النَّاسِ. Forget they ever did that. Forget they ever did that. Next time they come and say something, as though they're starting a fresh plate with us, there's a fresh sheet, there's nothing of the past. Nothing wrong they have done. They did it, but it's not in my book. It's not in my heart. There's no scar, no effect of that. Very comfortable, very easy. But if I don't, then grudges start forming. Just the presence of that person. We have a committee meeting, as soon as this person walks in, this guy holds up their guard. He's just irritated by the presence of this person. Every word they say is irritating. All these levels, a lot of these problems that we have in the community, brothers and sisters, can be dealt with in the family, between spouses, between parents and children, between siblings. If we learn afina anin nas, afina anin nas. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us the opportunity to inshallah do that. Walhamdulillah rabbil alameen. Apologies again for the length.
Jazakallah, Sheikh. Thank you so much for your, and absolutely no. I mean, any few words that you get to give to us, literally, they're so powerful, especially in this time. Like you said, we're in a pandemic, we're close together. You're changing the fabric of our relationships, and it's truly, truly precious, precious gems that you're leaving with us. Inshallah, as you said, Allah give us the tawfiq to practice this. This was Projects in the Blood. Wednesdays at 10 p.m. every Wednesday. Please make sure that you do join us again next week, and we will see you then, inshallah.